Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Bob Priddy. Hello, Bob.
Hi, glad to be here.
Glad to have you. Many will know Bob as a longtime journalist covering the state capitol in mid-Missouri for many, many years. How many years?
Well, 40 years of covering the Capitol for the Missouri Net, and before that, about 7 years at KLIK Radio when I was the news director here. So okay. I came here in 1967. We put the network on in 75, and then I retired at the end of 2014.
All right. Others are going to know Bob for his passion for history. He's a trustee and a former president of the State Historical Society, and then some are going to know him because he has a passion for steamboats.
Yeah.
And specifically to build a steamboat museum here in Jefferson City. This last week, he spoke to the city council to encourage them to help find a way to bring the Arabia Steamboat Museum from Kansas City to the capital city. So, Bob, tell us about the museum and why it's looking for a new home.
Steamboat Arabia, first of all, let me talk about the Steamboat Arabia.
Sure.
It stopped here for wood and to offload some cargo in September of 1856, and then headed upstream and never came back. 10 miles north of Kansas City, up near Parkville, it hit a submerged log, a 10-foot-long log. It holed the hull. It sank within 30 minutes into the soft Missouri River mud, and it sank so quickly and so deeply the cargo could not be recovered. It carried 200 tons. Well, it stayed buried in the mud. The river changed course. The Corps of Engineers straightened the channel. And the sinking place of the boat turned out to be in a Kansas court field in the 1980s. Well, a family from Independence named Hawley, Bob Hawley and his two sons, Dave and Greg, and then two friends, decided to go out and find the Arabia because they heard there'd been some treasure aboard,
Okay. Especially
whiskey.
All right.
And so they calculated where it sank generally. And they'd go out with a big metal detector and they just mowed the grass going back and forth throughout this field until they got a big hit on metal. They figured that was the boilers. And then they got a couple of smaller hits, and those would have been the steam engines. And then with test borings, they located exactly where that boat was. And they dug down in the winter of 88 and 89, 45 feet, and got to the cargo deck of the Arabia. The top deck had been washed away. They found 200 tons of cargo aboard that boat. And it was perfectly preserved because it had been sealed off from light and air.
Mm-hmm.
And they decided not to sell it. They decided to clean it, freeze dry what they had to, and open a museum. Kansas City at that time had the River Market area, which was pretty dilapidated and been a scene of a lot of mob violence and bombings and things like that for some time. So they made them a pretty good deal to rent a building there for their collection. Through the years, they've developed that collection. It's become quite a tourist attraction of 60,000 to 80,000 people a year. And it is an amazing place. If you haven't done it, go to 1856.com. Yeah. That's their museum site on the internet. And scroll down until you get to a video. And the video then will tell you not only what the museum is, but what they want it to become. They want it to become a national steamboat museum that focuses especially on the Missouri River and the great golden years between 1820, when the first boat came upstream, actually 1819, and the 1880s. When the railroad reached Fort Benton, Montana, which is the northernmost navigable place on the Missouri for the boats.
Yeah.
And by the time the railroads spread out that much, then the steamboat traffic declined. So they want to do something that captures that entire era with either artifacts from the boats in each decade or perhaps boats.
Okay.
Now, they have another boat called the Malta. They know where that is in Saline County. They've located it. They've been trying to raise money for several years to dig it up. It has another 100 tons of cargo, and we know exactly what was aboard it in 1841 when it sank, because the Choteau family of St. Louis owned the cargo, and they kept detailed records. So we know what's on it. And they've done test borings, and the test borings might indicate that as a complete boat.
Wow.
And so if they're able to, they want to bring up not just the cargo, they want to bring up the whole boat and put it in a museum.
Mm.
Well, their lease runs out in Kansas City in November of 2026.
Mm-hmm.
And the city wants to do new things with that whole River Market area, and a museum just wouldn't fit. Nobody in Kansas City, including the city, has come up with an alternative location. So in 2018, I was invited to go to a meeting at the museum. I was there, some people from St. Joe were there, some people from Marshall were there, and I think maybe some other folks. We talked about a new home. This place needs a new home. And so various cities have come up with sites, but nobody's been able to come up with the money. Mm. And Jefferson City is one of those places. On my way home that night, well, while I was in the meeting, I thought to myself, Jefferson City has 33 acres in the state penitentiary that it wants to develop. This would be a perfect place for the museum. And then I started thinking, it'd be even a better place if we put it up on Miner's Hill, which is the hill just east of the penitentiary.
Right.
That was once a Civil War post during when we were occupied. We were the only capital city occupied by the United States Army in American history during wartime. So that's where part of the Union Army was. And in fact, when they came to Jefferson City, the troops unloaded off the steamboat right there at the foot of Chestnut Street.
Okay.
They marched behind the penitentiary, up Lafayette Street, then down what was then East Main Street, right past where we are now, to the Capitol. And that's when they seized Jefferson City, just hours after our Confederate governor had left.
Mm-hmm.
So we were occupied during the war, and that landing is where they got off, right below that. So it'd be a perfect location,
mm-hmm.
prison or up there. Well, the folks at DNR would be interested in us being in the prison, and since the city has property in the prison, they're going to put the River Market area there.
Mm-hmm.
They've met with the library board to talk about building a new library in that area.
Okay.
And I think a steamboat museum would just really hit the spot for that general area that the city owns. So I'm interested in trying to find a way to get a city-state partnership here,
okay.
that will in one way or another raise the money, whether it's for outright grants from the state, or whether it's TIFs, or whether it's tax increment, it's tax credits, or any other means, to raise about $50 to $60 million, because that's what it's going to take to transfer the ownership from the private owners now into a 501c3, which already exists, in preparation for this, and then finding a new location that will actually be the home of the boat. St. Charles has an offer on the table. It's their second offer. The first one was rejected, and the folks in Kansas City aren't doing anything for now until they find out, especially if something's going to happen here.
Right.
And so I've been meeting with various people at the state level. I talked to one of the governor's senior policy advisors, and before we started this, I met with the head of DNR, and I've met with the Office of Administration, and I need to make an appointment to see the folks at Economic Development. But I'm hoping that we'll be able to get everybody together around a table, and we'll be able to figure out a way to get this hay baled together so there's enough money to, number one, keep the museum in Missouri somewhere, mm-hmm. but preferably now to keep it here. I think that opening that steamboat museum in Jefferson City would be a transformational thing for our town.
Mm.
I was in a focus group a little more than a year ago or so. And we were asked to go around the table and say, give one word that describes Jefferson City. And the word we finally all agreed upon was stagnant.
Mm.
And I think this riverboat would be a real shot in the arm. The museum would be a real shot in the arm for the city. And it would change the way we look at ourselves, and it would change the way people look at us in many ways. It would be a driver for tourism. I can see where there'd be a tremendous amount of academic advantages to having this boat here, this museum here. We have 7 institutions of higher learning within 35 miles, including Lynn Tech. And I look at people who could do courses in archaeology or museum management or textile preservation or anything like that, or some of the technical things that could be developed at Lynn Tech that would help explain the story in great computerized detail.
Mm-hmm. It
would be a wonderful laboratory experience here. It would have great value to the city in terms of part of our history, because in November of 2026, when the lease runs out on them in Kansas City, November of 2026 will be the 200th anniversary of the first legislative session in Jefferson City.
Hmm.
There's no better way to capitalize on that kind of observation of our 200th anniversary as state capital than to open this museum, especially since the museum is commemorating basically 200 years of steamboat traffic past Jefferson City.
Mm-hmm.
We already have Loman's Landing, which is one of the few commercial buildings of the old river trade left on the river. And we have then we'd have the museum just a few blocks away at the prison, which would be a great way to play off each other. There are so many advantages to having that museum here. St. Charles is a nice city. They have a lot of things going for them. But I think in terms of what it would mean to people of a town and what it would mean for the state of the whole, putting that museum in the center part of the state and in the state capital would be an incredible thing for all of central Missouri as well as Jefferson City. So that's what I've been working on for the last 8 years. We've tried to, Dave Griffith, my representative and representative from here, we've tried to get legislation approved in the past 7 years that would increase the admission fee on casinos with that extra money going into the museum.
Right.
Part of it. And most recently, because the veterans' homes are suffering so much financially, mm-hmm. we're going to have part of that money go to the veterans' homes and part of it going to the museum. But this year, because our veterans' homes are in such dire financial straits that they're talking about closing one, Dave came to me and said, we really need to have all $2 instead of just $1 go to the veterans. That was very difficult for me to say no, but I had told him last year that if the museum became a burden to his proposal to get money for veterans to take us out, and when I saw how little the veterans' homes are getting from admission fees from casinos now, I had no choice but to take it out. So now I have to find another way to finance this museum, mm-hmm. and that's what I went to the city council to talk to them about. Your reporter, Steffi, was there and wrote a nice article about it. I'm hoping that this will generate some public interest in this town and maybe even some philanthropy that would help. But I think having this museum here and the unique Churchill Museum in Fulton, as well as the various museums and things they have at the University of Missouri in Columbia, would create a whole new form of regional tourism for central Missouri.
Okay.
Marshall has done a feasibility study. And everything in that feasibility study that talks about how much money would be generated, how much money would be churned, and various other points they make applies to Jefferson City, except it applies in multiples for us.
Hmm.
So this would be a tremendous civic, commercial, and tourism addition to our town.
Yeah,
we could be looking at. Probably the most significant progressive era in Jefferson City in more than a century. And this would be part of it. Back in the 1890s, Sedalia wanted to take the capital away from Jefferson City.
Right.
And they sent a couple of carloads of people here early one morning during the legislative session. And they got off the train. And when the legislature went into session, within a couple of hours, the House had passed a resolution putting an issue on the ballot for 1896 about moving the capital to Sedalia. And then after lunch, the Senate did the same thing in 2 hours. People here were caught flat-footed. They had no way to fight it. They'd been fighting it for 10 years anyway. And so it went on the ballot in 1896. Well, one of the things that the people in Sedalia said about Jefferson City was that we were too comfortable being the state capital. We were just going to cruise along being the state capital.
Right.
Well, we're kind of there.
We are, yeah.
And so, but there were 20 months between the time the legislature acted and the election. And so Jefferson City got a lot done. In that period, we opened the bridge across the river, mm-hmm. which stopped one of the attacking points that the river separated Jefferson City from North Missouri. Well, mm-hmm. now we had a bridge that linked up to the railroads on the other side, so that wiped that out. But during that time, from the 1880s until 1925, we electrified our city. We built a trolley line that even went across the river. We paved our streets. We built a water company. We built our first hospital. We had a big school bond issue, and we built a capital.
Wow.
And we really haven't done anything quite of that scope in the last 100 years, except now we look at what's going on in our town. We've expanded our hospitals. We've expanded our public schools. Mm-hmm. Helias is expanding. Even the other smaller schools,
right.
if you count Wardsville,
right.
Schools are expanding. So we're doing hospitals, we're doing education. And now it's time to do the Steamboat Museum.
Yeah.
It would be just an incredible progressive spurt for our town, and not to mention the convention center.
Right, right.
That's going to have to stand or fall on its own merits, but we've been talking a convention center for a long time. Mm-hmm. If you go back through your microfilm copies of the newspaper, go back to April of 1925, we're just short of 100 years, the mayor of Jefferson City was interviewed in the newspaper, and he said, we need a convention center.
Yep.
And so we've been talking about this for 100 years. And he died, unfortunately. He was a very popular mayor. He was elected 6 times. He mm-hmm. died before the end of his 6th term, so who knows how much longer he would have served. But his dream of a convention center died with him then, because not long after he died, the stock market collapsed.
Sure.
Then we got through the Depression. World War II came along. And by the end of the war, when we started to rebuild the country, and the greatest generation took charge of things, the mayor's idea was long forgotten.
Mm-hmm.
And it's only been in the last 10 years or so that that's been rekindled here.
Yeah.
And so we need to have some kind of a good convention meeting place in the capital city of Missouri. So between the Capitol, a new library, Steamboat Museum, and a couple of other things that are going on, we could see another great explosion of progressive living in Jefferson City.
Yeah.
And we need that, because I believe the idea that we're just a little bit too comfortable right now just being the capital.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about, you mentioned the economic impact study that Marshall had done.
Mm-hmm.
So what kind of, let's talk about what it would bring to the community economically, as well as what this museum might cost.
Well, let's talk about cost first.
Okay.
It's going to take about $15 million to transfer the ownership from private hands into a nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marshall's study indicated, and Marshall wanted to put the museum at 65 and 70, which would be a great location. Mm-hmm. Well, it wasn't very close to the river, but it would be really visible. So their study indicated that would take about 8 acres of land and $35 million.
Okay.
Now, that was done just before the pandemic.
Okay.
And so we know what construction costs have done since then. So I'm thinking it's going to take $40 million or more just for the building.
Mm-hmm.
And if we've got the land, we've already taken care of that.
Sure.
So that we're talking maybe at a $40 million building. I need to throw in another $5 million to dig up the Malta.
Yeah.
So we're now looking at about a $50 or $60 million package. Bond issue would not be out of the question. Tax credits, tax increment financing, various other things would all contribute to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just getting people together to work on a plan to make this happen. And that's what I'm trying to do. When I sit down and talk to the people at the state level, or when I went to talk to the council the other night, I'm hoping that somewhere we can get some folks around a table and they can start exploring just what can be done, including this whole thing also plays into something the state wants to do. And the state wants to redevelop the prison and make it into kind of a historic park.
Mm.
That's, they're tearing down a lot of the buildings to clear the way for that kind of thing. But they want to save the core of that prison as a historic park. And I've been to, I've been to the territorial prison in Wyoming where they've done this. And it's really fascinating.
Yeah.
And if this is done right, it can be really interesting. Now, some members of the legislature have complained, especially the Appropriations Committee people have complained that this is a terrible idea. Who would want to do this? Or I wouldn't want, one of them said, I wouldn't take my granddaughter to see it. Well, 350,000 people a year go to see Alcatraz. Well, no, I'm sorry. 1.5 million people a year go to see Alcatraz. I'm sure a lot of them are granddaughters. 350,000 people a year go visit the old Eastern Correctional Center in Philadelphia. A lot of granddaughters do that.
Mm-hmm.
I've been with some folks who've taken a tour here. And usually they say, why do I want to go tour this place? But then they finish the tour and they have to pick their jaws up off the ground.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to me, as grisly as it sounds, and I'm sure it will sound terrible to the people at the Capitol who complain, it's amazing how many people want to sit in the chairs in the gas chamber and get their picture taken. So there's great tourism ability, but not only that, that prison represents, well, that prison is rooted in Jefferson City's existence,
mm-hmm.
but it represents also the history of incarceration in America.
Exactly.
It was around from 1836 until the 21st century, and you can just the structural changes that you see over there,
mm-hmm.
as well as learning about the difference in approaches to handling inmates. Those are all, that's part of, that's the history of corrections in America that we have over here. So it's far than, far more than buildings and walls. And people who go there can be educated about that part of our society that we often would rather forget about. Mm-hmm. The idea of locking somebody up and throwing away the key was very popular for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And so this prison represents all the progressive new moves that we have made through the years. So it's far more than just an old penitentiary. And it's a great teaching tool. Some people want to move the gas chamber from where it is now up to closer to the old buildings for the development of the park. And there's some discussion about whether that should happen. I don't think I would object to moving the gas chamber up to the central part so people would see the gas chamber. I've suggested that they leave the sidewalk to the gas chamber still there so it can be a sidewalk or something as part of the development. Mm-hmm. But then taking a plaque, a big bronze plaque, and putting it in the ground or maybe on a stand that shows this is where the gas chamber was. And you can do the same thing with all of the other buildings that were in that prison in that yard. This is where the saddle tree makers were. This is where the shoe factory was and so on. Mm-hmm. That keep the historical nature of the area alive.
Right.
But still leave it open to modern development and use.
Yeah.
So what it would mean to Jefferson City is it would mean some jobs during construction especially, and it would mean some jobs in the museum because you have to have people. You can't do it all with just technical stuff. But it would mean an incredible learning opportunity. It would bring visitors to Jefferson City. You put a few billboards up on I-70 and say, see an 1841 steamboat. Mm-hmm. Use exit something and come. We'd get a lot of people. About 2.5 million people a year go to the Lake of the Ozarks. Many of them have to come through Jefferson City.
Mm-hmm.
University of Missouri football and basketball or sporting events draws a lot of people to Columbia. But just off the top of my head, if we were to say buy an advertising page in the programs of every SEC football team and say next time you come to play the Missouri Tigers, stay in Jefferson City. Come in on Friday night, have a nice meal, a good room that's as good as anything in Columbia, tour a steamboat museum in the morning and go see a football game in the afternoon, come back and have a nice dinner and a nice hotel and then drive home on Sunday.
Yeah.
Now, there's ways to promote this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we could make a lot of good use out of something like this in our town. And we're running short on time. We've got to find a way to do this. And so... because the bill to increase admission fees at casinos isn't going to fly for this purpose this year. We've got to find a way to put it together. And I'm hoping that there are people in this town who have the expertise to do that. And I'm hoping that they'll call their city council people and say, hey, we'd love to have this. I get stopped on the street by people who know I've been working on this for several years. And they say, what's the latest on the boat? Are we going to get the boat?
Yeah.
And I can't tell them anything except we're still working on it.
So what is your perception of the timeline?
Well, that's hard to come up with a timeline because we can't get a museum built by November of 2026.
Right.
Just not going to happen. But there might be an opportunity for them to continue their lease on at higher cost, though, on a month-by-month basis. Or Dave Hawley, who is one of the surviving diggers, now as president of the museum, has told me he could store the stuff for a while if there is a commitment to building the building. So it's really flexible in what kind of a timetable we have. But we kind of need to make a decision soon because it's going to be either a go or no go on keeping this prison in Missouri, this museum in Missouri. There is an offer that's been on the table from the very beginning from the Heinz History Museum in Pittsburgh. Buy the collection and move it there. The boat was built in a suburb of Pittsburgh, 1851 or so. And they would love to have this cargo back in Pittsburgh. Well, we can't let that happen.
Right.
There are 200 steamboats that came past Jefferson City during those years that never made it back to St. Louis.
Hmm.
And Dave knows where there's at least a dozen of them buried, including there's a 300-footer just upstream from us about 10 miles. It would be great to dig out, except that there's a Corps of Engineers levee right on top of it.
Ah.
So we can't get that one. But the steamboat that Francis Parkman rode up from St. Louis to Kansas City before he set off on the trek that became the book called The Oregon Trail, one of the great classical books, that boat is still in the river. But there are other boats to dig up and to put on display, and more stories to tell about how things really were on the frontier that can be brought through these steamboats. Most folks don't realize until they see this museum what life was like on the frontier 5 years before the Civil War. People will be surprised by the things they see in this exhibit. There's beautiful jewelry that women wore. Nobody would have thought, I sure never thought, that there would be imported English china that people were eating off of in Omaha City, population 1,500. I always thought, people lived in log cabins and sod huts,
right,
and wore buckskins and linsey woolsey clothes. Well, they wore colorful clothes. We never realized very much how colorful our ancestors were, because all we see is black and white photographs.
Sure, sure.
Well, you get up there and you see they wore pretty colorful stuff.
Yeah.
But everything is in there, from tables and chairs to clothes to jewelry to 4,000 boots and shoes to a few weapons to two prefabricated houses that were on that board, tobacco that still smells like tobacco, and food. That's one of the amazing stories, too, is they found canned food perfectly preserved.
Yeah.
Again, because no light or oxygen. And they opened a jar of pickles. And one of the guys ate an 1856 pickle.
Yeah.
And he said it was still as crisp and as sweet as the day it went in that jar.
Wow.
Now they watched this guy for some time. You don't eat 135-year-old food. And he's now 89 years old.
Yeah.
And he still shows up at the museum from time to time to share his story with folks.
I thought he was coming back for another pickle.
Well, I don't know. But they do have that food on display.
Yeah.
They found some French perfume. Hmm. And they sent it off to New York to be analyzed at a lab. And they now have reconstituted that perfume. So you can buy some 1856 perfume at their shop. So anybody who hasn't seen this museum needs to go to Kansas City to see it firsthand. It's a short enough drive. You can make a great weekend trip out of it and enjoy Kansas City, but see the museum. And if you want to also look at what the museum is and learn a little bit more about what they hope it can be, there's a place on the internet to look at. It's called 1856.com.
Okay.
And that's their museum page. And then you scroll down to a video. And that tells you the story of the Arabia. And Dave Hawley is one of those who narrates it. And it talks about how they want to expand it with the Malta and then beyond, and what they hope will happen as they create a national steamboat museum. Look at that, and if you're not sold on it, I don't know, you don't have a soul.
All right. Strong words there. We will put that link in our show notes here.
Good,
so
thank
that
you.
Folks can definitely check it out. So,
good.
Bob, obviously, you're very passionate about this,
and
what's been the reaction from the folks that you at the Capitol and elsewhere?
Well, everybody would love to have it. The casino industry opposes every step, every chance, every time we've had the chance to ask for an increase in admission fees. The casino industry is our takers. They're not givers in any way. They complain that they're good corporate citizens. They're not. They complain they're great supporters of veterans. They're not. They bragged a lot about, during the most recent campaign for sports wagering, about how much money would be generated for education, $100 million in 5 years, and how that would improve teacher salaries. Well, $100 million is nothing compared to a state budget for education of about $9 to $10 billion a year. And so adding $20 million a year to that is nothing. And then you split that money up among 520 school districts and 88,000 teachers, and they might get enough money to put a dime in a parking meter.
Yeah.
So it was a completely deceptive advertising campaign. And they got it, and they got sports wagering at a tax rate that's less than half of the taxes we now charge on the slot machines and card games. They're able to make deductions from the amount of revenue that can be taxed to begin with. The state of Missouri is going to recognize very little money out of sports wagering. Mm. And worse, in terms of funding for the veterans and the gaming commission and even their own home dock cities. And the industry figures indicate that 95% of the money bet on sports will be done remotely. And that means there will be no admission fees attached to 95% of those funds. So the veterans of homes that have gone from $30 million 12 years ago or so down to $7 million from these admission fees aren't going to benefit. And as the admissions continue to drop, and they're down about 4% again so far this year, as they continue to drop, that funding that goes to the Gaming Commission for its budget and then trickles down to the veterans' homes, it's going to be less and less. And that's why they're so worried about they might have to close it. Mm-hmm. The state has been putting about $40 million in general revenue into that program, taking money away from other programs to keep the veterans' homes going at the level they're going. And the governor asked for another $10 million in his State of the State message. So the casinos think that's fine. They've talked about how much money they've contributed to the veterans' funds through the years. They haven't contributed a dime because every dollar that the casinos have put into veterans has been required by state law.
Right.
Nothing voluntary about these people. And so the need to actually find another way to finance veterans and to find a way to finance the Gaming Commission, and while we're at it, to finance the Steamboat, is going to require some extraordinary steps. Mm. And so I'm trying to look at people who have the expertise to figure out how we do this.
Yeah.
I come up with the idea, but it's above my pay grade to figure out how we make it happen.
Sure.
But there's got to be a way, and it's worth it. It will mean so much more to the state of Missouri, and especially to Jefferson City or St. Charles or wherever, to have this museum.
Yeah.
And but it would mean so much to Jefferson City on so many different levels, including what the state wants to do with the prison and what we can do with our part of the prison land. Mm-hmm. It's just hard to put it all in words to describe the opportunities, but we have this golden opportunity for us right now, and times are getting short, so we need to be getting something put together fairly quickly. And one of the first people, when I came back from that meeting in Kansas City in 2018, there were three people I immediately got in contact with. One was our state senator at the time. His name was Mike Kehoe.
Yep.
The other was then Lieutenant Governor Mike Parson. Because the lieutenant governor is on various boards and commissions that can deal with this. Mm-hmm. And the third person was Mayor Turgeon, who had her hopes for a convention center down in the prison. And so those were the first three people I really talked to. Mm-hmm. And they all were very enthusiastic. And every time I ran into the governor, he asks me where we are. So I know he's still interested.
Sure.
And I'm hoping that the governor could say a few words to the right people and pry some money loose, perhaps, or do something. But otherwise, other state agencies that are involved in things could help out a lot. And I hope that this little talk to the city council the other night will generate some public interest that will generate some ideas along with that, including we've got some folks in town who have shown that they are philanthropic in nature, and anything they can do to start it would be very valuable to our city.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's where we are.
All right. Well, keep us posted on this.
No,
and we appreciate all you're doing to try to make this a reality. Yeah. And we thank you for coming by today.
Well, I appreciate the chance to talk about it. I'll talk about it to anybody, any group, anywhere.
All right.
All right. Thanks, Gary.
Thanks, Bob.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.